This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, co-founder and editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. Today's show is brought to you by Ecole Chocolat, the online school for those looking to become chocolate makers or chocolate experts. The great things that you can study at your own pace, so if you have a day job but dream about having your own chocolate company one day, you can make it happen. Be sure to check out the site at ecolechocolat.com. I'm very excited about today's show for two reasons. One, we get to talk about France, one of my favorite places on the planet. And two, I get to meet two women who have been in the magazine, but whom I've never met in person. First up is Jessie Canellos-Weiner, the Paris-based author and illustrator. She's the author of Edible Paradise, a coloring book of seasonal fruits and vegetables, which is an adult coloring book. If you don't know this, adult coloring books are all the rage right now. Jessie is also a Cherry Bomb contributor, and we featured her beautiful watercolor work in past issues. So Jessie, bienvenue. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Long-time listener, first-time caller. So I'm very excited to be here.
Fantastic. I really am psyched to meet you. I mean, we've been working long distance now for several issues.
Definitely. And I work with Claudia, actually. She designed my book as
Claudia.
Well.
So you know, it's definitely funny. When I was saying the name of the book, I almost held it up and I was like, oh, wait, we're not on television. But Donna from Cherry Bomb's in the studio, Snapchatting or Instagramming or something. So I guess I can hold the book up. So if you're following on Snapchat, this is what the book looks like. But yes, Claudia Wu, who's usually my co-host, she's on vacation. She designed the book with
you.
She
did.
Right? Which is hugely exciting. So let's talk about you, though. You are from Chicago, right?
I am. I grew up there in the inner city. And how did I end up in Paris? I don't know if we want the long story or what, if we want to jump right into it. But I moved to Paris. It was maybe 2 weeks after graduation. I had no plan. I wanted to travel. I had 1 year before I had to pay back my student loans. So I just Googled Au Pair Paris. And 2 weeks later, I was on my way. So it was a leap of faith, but I just felt like it was a moment to really just do whatever I felt like I could do in that maybe last year of freedom that I had on the plate.
That's wild. What did you study in school?
I studied theater, costume design, and studio art. So my background is in costume design.
So did you go there and au pair?
I did, yeah.
How was that?
It was all right. I'll try to be diplomatic about it. But at the end of the day, it brought me to Paris, and my life would have been completely different hadn't I done that. But
so were you a live-in?
I was a live-in, very much so. And
did you speak French?
Not at all.
Wow, okay.
I actually had French for Dummies on the airplane on my way there, so it was very humbling, and it still is, but I feel like if you really want to live in France, you just have to take the leap and do it.
How many kids were you in charge of?
Just one.
Okay.
But it was enough for me.
That's manageable, I guess, more or less. So how did you... Okay, so you stayed?
I stayed. The story took a turn at the end of my first year. I had accepted to do an MFA at Boston University to study costume design. And my mind was totally ready to leave France. And then I went out on a Friday night and I met somebody. And that's usually how the whole France story extends. So I kept finding a way to come back and back and back. And yeah, speaking of which, he is here with us now.
Yes. The person, I was wondering, the person you're talking about, is that the, I didn't want to ask in case the person sitting in the studio was not the person you met on that Friday night and caused you to stay in Paris. So how were you making a living the whole time? I think for all of us who dream of going to Paris one day, it's like, okay, don't speak the language, and how would I not wind up on the streets?
It's really complicated, actually. I try to be as frank about it as possible because it is such a huge jump. And if you don't speak French, it's totally vital to doing something actually interesting in France. So I was an au pair. I did a 1,000 gig job. I was an English teacher. I was bartending every now and then. I was teaching English. So after a while, if you don't have a visa and if you don't have the right network, there comes the point where you really have to find something to do. And so I moved back to the States a few times because I was trying to figure it out. But once I had a visa, I was able to really jump into what I really wanted to do. Which was what I'm doing now is being a food illustrator, food stylist, and author.
So tell us about your life in Paris today.
It's good. It's evolving every day, which is cool. I work a lot with French clients, so every day is different, but I'm either in my studio drawing, I'm meeting with clients, I like to walk around and find inspiration at the markets, seeing friends, talking about food as much as possible. So it's great. I mean,
what part of town do you live in?
I live in Vincennes. It's just to the east of Paris, which is kind of cool. It's kind of a nice break from being in the city all day. And we live right by a forest, which is really nice. So it definitely leads to some nice little promenades at night.
Do you cook at home?
I do all the time. So I'd say food was always my first passion. Actually, the first time I came to New York, I was looking at the CIA. My parents brought me out to take a look at it. And I never really found how I could incorporate food into a career. And I pursued costume design quite a bit. I worked in theater and film and TV, but I think moving to France the final time and really thinking about food and from, you know, a drawing perspective too, I really found that love and that inspiration that I needed to really pursue what I'm doing now.
So do you have a studio in your apartment where you do your...
I have one actually in Montreuil, which is they've been calling it the Brooklyn of Paris for
it's
a few years now.
It's always the Brooklyn of somewhere, right?
It's true. No comparison, but it is kind of the Brooklyn of Paris, but it's a shared space, so I'm able to see people every day.
And I know you do lots of different things, but you've done watercolors for us.
I have, yes.
Do you have a favorite medium? Do you do lots of different things?
I love watercolor. I'd say that's my first passion. Actually, right next to you, I did a limited edition copy of my book, Edible Paradise, but it's all done in watercolor. So it's definitely cool to see the transition between black and white and into color as well.
Oh, this is beautiful.
But I think watercolor works especially well for food because it's organic, it's moving. The watercolor kind of has a life of its own, and I find like that the pigments really are true to life and really appetizing.
One of my favorite things that you did for us was illustrate a Dory Greenspan story on macaroons. Did you meet Dory?
I did. Oh, she actually invited me out to coffee after the article came out, so I was so happy.
I'm
that
so jealous.
You guys were able to do that for me.
You guys got to hang out in Paris. I mean, Dory's just amazing.
She is. She's incredible.
Is the macaroon thing still going strong over there?
I'd say the past few years the past 4 years when I moved back for good, I feel like all things Brooklyn and American are definitely hot. So there was a cupcake phase. What else? I mean, any kind of little food trend that you can make into a mom and pop place has been tried. So macaroons are kind of the establishment, you know, you can find them everywhere, but I feel like people are interested to try, you know, I don't know what.
Eclairs are big now.
Eclairs, yes.
Eclairs had a moment. I think everybody's looking for that, you know, like in America, what's the next cupcake? What's the next macaroon, et cetera?
There's a cream puff wave as well. That's kind of on its way out, but there's always something.
So one of my favorite things about Paris is just how you grocery shop. Mm-hmm. I mean, now there are, obviously for years, there have been proper grocery stores like Monoprix. But that whole idea that you can just walk down the street and go to your butcher and the baker and the cheesemaker and the wine shop and all that, is that how you shop for groceries?
It is. That's one of my little pleasures in the day. Actually, one of the things I wanted to try to emulate in Edible Paradise is the past few years I've really been going to my local market and knowing my producer and really seeing the change of the seasons. And so that's something that I wanted to evoke in the book, is really understanding, you know, what comes in March, the beginning of asparagus and strawberries and all those things. But yeah, I love going to the market, and we live next to some really amazing shops. So it takes a little bit more time, of course, but knowing how much better every little bit and piece of your ingredient list is going to be is just so fun. And once you know your producers and everything too, it's always kind of a pleasure to bump into everybody.
And do all the shopkeepers know you now?
Yeah, they do.
Do they know? Do they call you the American or something?
Yeah, or the English girl.
Oh, the English girl. Okay.
They're undecided.
So let's talk about the book. Is it out now?
It is. It came out on the 15th.
Oh, great. And you have there's an event tonight in Brooklyn. Tell us about that.
It's at the Vail Collective from 5 to 7 p.m. in Williamsburg. And we'll have books for sale. And then there's also a big communal table. And I brought all of my coloring supplies, so you can color in with me. I can give you some pointers, sign your book. So it'll be pretty fun, I think.
So if you live in New York City or in Brooklyn, or I guess New York City, Brooklyn is part of New York City, you can come and meet Jessie in person and buy a copy of the of her adult coloring book. So let's talk about that trend. At what point did you think, oh, I want to do this?
It's funny. I think the trend really started in France maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and I started to notice, you know, these adult coloring books at the checkout of every bookstore and department store, and I thought, food, there's got to be something to do there. And so there were some food coloring books, but they were all very much kind of copy and paste and a little static, and I thought it would be great to do something with fruits and vegetables and in a very kind of freehand style, which is totally what Edible Paradise is. So I tried to shop the idea around, and then finally I brought it to my editor at Rizzoli, Martinka. And the following week, there were articles in NPR and the New York Times all about adult coloring. So it was very serendipitous, the whole process.
Good timing. So when you were a child, did you color in the lines or did you go outside the lines in your coloring books?
I think I always stayed in the lines.
Did you?
How about you? Have you tried adult coloring?
You know, I haven't. It probably would be a good idea for me because I'm not great at downtime. So that would be some really good enforced downtime. I also think what would appeal to me greatly is every time I go to a art supply shop or a place that sells pencils and you see those beautiful sets of colored pencils, I always want to buy them. But then I'm like, what will I do with these colored pencils? So I could color in the pages of your coloring book. But yeah, I would probably stay in the lines. I was that kid too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what that says about you when you grow up, like if you stay in the lines or color outside the lines.
I don't know. I've always been an artistic kid, but I think I was always trying to achieve, I don't know, realism. I don't know exactly what, but yeah, I mean, everybody, I mean, it's really interesting because this book has a life of its own. So seeing how everybody colors it in, you know, all ages, whether people stay true to life or if they go to the dark side, it'll be interesting to see.
The goth version of Edible Paradise, all blacks and maroons and purples. Did you have the 64 box of crayons when you were growing up?
I did. I may have had the 89 or...
Oh, wow.
So I've always been pretty artistic as a kid.
I don't think I had the 64. I think I had the one size down, but I think I was envious of the kids who had the 64 box. But a lot of choice always kind of fries my brain, so maybe my parents knew what they were doing when they restricted me to the smaller box, you know, that I didn't have all that choice. So what else are you doing while you're here?
I've been here for a week now, and I've had some appointments with some clients, which is always cool. I live kind of far away, so it's nice to have a face in the minds of people. We're actually going to the Hudson Valley this weekend.
Oh, nice.
Just kind of to chill out. And then next week, we're going to Columbus, Ohio. I'm doing a residency at my alma mater, Denison University, in Granville, Ohio, in case anybody is out there. And then I'm doing a few book events in Columbus and Chicago as well.
Oh, fantastic. Any eating while you're here?
There's been plenty of eating already, but I'm sure there'll be more. In Chicago, my hometown, we definitely have some spots I need to hit up. You guys were there recently, right?
We were. We went to Elizabeth.
Okay.
Elena Reagan's place, which we recommend highly.
Okay, I haven't been there yet.
That was a lot of fun. And I think, like you, she's incredibly creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll be really inspired by the food that she serves. There are always themes.
Okay.
You know, when we were there, I think it was fairy tales. And some of the dishes were Disney inspired fairy tales, and others were the Grimm brothers fairy tales. So you got the stories told both ways.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, she's fantastic. Definitely. We can hook you up with her. And how about Paris? Where are the hot places to eat in Paris right now?
I think it's a really interesting time to go, actually. There are a lot of young French chefs and people coming from all over the place to start restaurants in France. So lots of interesting, it's kind of like everything that's going on in the States as well, but people really connecting to really good ingredients, and the natural wine movement is really hot at the moment, craft coffee. So I feel like it is kind of the time to go if you really want to explore. What are some good spots? Where have I been recently? Good question. This isn't French, but there's a really good Israeli outpost called Miznon, and they have amazing pita sandwiches, and it's just finger looking good. It's amazing. Recently, there's a great place called The Broken Arm, which is a kind of a concept store, and they have an amazing Swedish chef named Linda Greenberg, and she makes the most beautiful, if you want to talk about composition, it's just gorgeous, very veggie centric food that's really beautiful. Yeah, there's so many places right now. You guys have to do a Paris issue.
I know, we talk about that all the time. that's definitely on the list of things that, that we hope to do. And you, I know the French love politics. You must read the news and be like, what the hell is happening in my native land?
Everybody asks all the time.
Oh my gosh. You must be bombarded.
Yeah, I can't take a taxi without getting asked about Donald Trump. So you don't even want to know.
What do you say?
To them? Yeah. Well,
I mean. Or to yourself when you read the headlines.
You know, it's so extreme. You just have to laugh at it and just hope that people have common sense and vote for who they really think is going to do something. So I don't know if that's too diplomatic, but
I think I was watching the CNN town hall. They interviewed both Bernie and Hillary, and it was interesting when they were interviewing Hillary, and she said she keeps getting all these calls and emails from world leaders saying, do you want me to come out and endorse you now? You know, what should I do? And she's like, no, this is for America to decide. It's okay. But I actually believe those conversations are taking place. Like, I have no doubt that, like, Angela Merkel and everybody, they're just, like, texting Hillary, like,
Hill, for real.
what's going on? How can I help? Who knows? I mean, it's going to be a long road to November.
How many
man.
More months? Yikes. Oh,
yeah. So anyway, what else can we talk about? We just love Paris so much. Like, we had Clancy Miller on
that
the show last
show.
Week, yeah. The author of the book Cooking Solo. And she similarly just kind of went for it and made a life for herself in Paris. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it's just, I used to work for a French company and spent a lot of time over there. And Paris is intimidating. It's a wonderful place as a tourist, but trying to build a life there can be a challenge.
It totally is. Being in New York, I feel like myself again. And I have to kind of ask myself that question. I'm in the process of applying for French nationality and to feel France is home. But at the same time, it's never... You're never completely at ease with yourself or with everything that's going on. I love it, but it's just... I've had a long road being there, and I don't take it for granted, but it's just, I've had so many phases, I've known so many people, my career has taken off, but at the same time, it's, you know, moving there is ambitious, and somehow I made it work, but it's, I don't know, I don't want to discourage anybody, but...
And it's not like you went over there working for a big company.
Exactly.
You know, when you've chosen to sort of... very challenging paths for yourself, mm-hmm. you know, moving to a foreign country and making that work for you, but also pursuing the creative life.
And doing an impossible job. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's you're an artist. It's not easy to be an artist and to make a living doing what you love. Do you have any advice for our listeners who either dream of pursuing a creative path or who already are on it?
I think... luckily for me, I kind of had a symbolic moment where I was living in New York and I knew I was going to come back to France. That's when we decided to get married, my husband and I. And I felt like I had to find that. I knew, like, if I moved back to France, I just had to commit everything to it. It wasn't about searching. I would just find something I would love and I would do it. And so I think, I mean, that was an extreme moment, but really finding that passion is super important to pursuing something. And then I arrived, I was picking up the phone and calling art directors and magazines, and then from there it happened little by little. But I feel like you, through a process of craft and doing whatever you want to do every day, getting a good portfolio and reputation going, and then from there just really committing to making it. If you want to be an illustrator, be an illustrator. If you want to be a writer, be a writer. It's about just jumping into it completely. And of course it's never that easy, but things come together and you start making contacts and it's a moving wheel. So I don't know if that answered your question, but moving to France, I think learn French. It's really important. It opens a door to lots of people and to interesting jobs. Or if you want to move to France, make sure you stay long enough where you can learn French. So stay at least a year if possible.
And you also have a blog.
I do, yeah. It's called The Franco Fly. And I started it right before I moved back to France the last time. So it's really evolved through all of my phases. At the beginning, it was more kind of like French people do the darndest things. And then now it's more, you know, illustrations and book events and whatever. So I should probably look back and see how my storytelling has changed. That's actually how I started illustrating, was because of my blog. Because I started a food blog and I thought, I'm a horrible photographer, so maybe I'll just start sketching again. So started posting regularly and I got a good response on my illustrations, and then just started pursuing that. So,
and are you pals with the other expats over there, like Lost and She's Land?
I am.
Can you hear that? I don't know if people hear the applause. That might be for you. For those who have never been to Heritage Radio, where we record, we actually are sort of part of Roberta's restaurant in Bushwick, and people are just eating right outside us, and there seems to be some sort of St. Patrick's Day party going on, but being of Irish descent, I'm pretty certain that none of those people out there are of Irish descent, so I'm not entirely sure what's going on, but it's never a dull moment here. We can say that much. Are you pals with all the expats? I'm thinking like Lost in Cheese
Land. Yeah, she's a friend of mine. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Actually, that's a good way that I met a lot of friends, is through blogging, which sounds kind of funny, but you can kind of sense people out right away if they're cool, what they're into, you know, what their hashtags are like, and kind of check if they have a sense of humor or not. So I've met, you know, all the girls who are blogging, and everybody's doing their thing and everybody's supportive. So it's great.
And you have a fun Instagram account.
Thank you. Thank you.
Who are some of your favorite folks to follow on Instagram? We're all obsessed. I mean, I'm sure it's the same in Paris. We're all obsessed with Instagram.
Yeah. Who do I like? I follow a lot of illustrators. I like a guy called Klim Draws. He's a fashion illustrator, but he does a lot of cool GIFs, and he does a lot of cutouts that he poses in reality. It's quite funny to see. Who else do I like? Cherry Bomb, of course, and all the Cherry Bomb gang.
That's true. We do have a fun little gang. Okay, so we have a thing called the speed round. So we are going to subject you to the speed round. Tea or coffee?
Lately it's tea. Green tea.
Was I going to have you do the speed round? I feel like I was. No, you don't want to do the speed round? Do you want to do it for Mimi? We have a special guest in the studio. We have lots of guests today. Today's a crazy day. We have a lot of moving parts today, but Donna Yen, one of our amazing editorial assistants, is hanging out in the studio, and she will be guest hosting next week. Next week. So she's just sitting here taking notes on how not to host a radio show, so she can do everything differently than from what I do next week. All right, back to the speed round. Tea or coffee?
Tea. Green tea.
Green tea. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything in it?
Nope, straight up.
Sweet or salty?
Can I say both?
Sure.
Okay.
What is in your refrigerator at home?
We've been away for about a week, so it's kind of a condiment graveyard, but you don't even want to know. Usually I have, it's pretty well stocked with fruits and vegetables and all different kinds of bits and pieces, but now it's probably where Heinz goes to die.
Favorite thing to eat?
There are many, but I'd probably say bread and butter together and separately.
The best bread and butter is in Paris.
It's true.
Yeah.
Confirmed.
Least favorite thing to eat?
I don't know. I've always had a weird thing with gum. I think I put gum behind my ear when I was a kid and never got it out of my mind. So I don't know. I haven't been able to shake this thing, but.
Okay. You're the first person to say gum. I like that. That's a good answer. Okay. Favorite snack?
Bread and butter, but let me be more specific. You know, I like, you know, a piece of cheese and an apple, something like that. It depends on the day. Or something from any boulangerie in Paris.
Favorite kitchen tool?
Ooh, so many. I love my lemon zester. I know it's not something you use every day, but it's effective and it always brightens things up.
Place you'd like to travel to next?
I would love to go to southwestern France, like Biarritz and that whole region. I'm going to my alma mater next week, which is in Granville, Ohio, but I'm still looking forward to it. And where else? Maybe Vietnam.
Vietnam's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been there a few times now. It's probably one of my favorite places on the planet. When things are rough, I always think, you know what, maybe I'll just go to Vietnam and be an English teacher and go somewhere near the beach. And
you can still do it, Carrie.
I can still, you know what, one day. And the nice thing about, I guess, what you do and kind of what we do at Cherry Bomb is these jobs are mobile today.
It's amazing. It really is.
Yeah. So you can really kind of set up anywhere in the world if you're willing to make it work. Jesse, tell us again about the event tonight.
It's this evening in Williamsburg at the Vail Collective. It is from 5 to 7 p.m. And definitely come out if you can. It would be great to meet everybody and come get your book signed.
And make sure to say hi to Jesse if you listen to the show. So, Jesse, thank you so much for visiting.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
It's such a thrill to finally be able to put the emails to the face. And I hope the next time we see you, it's in Paris. So, everyone, Jesse's book, Edible Paradise, A Coloring Book of Seasonal Fruits and Vegetables, is out now. Get a copy. It's a great excuse to buy that beautiful set of colored pencils and get coloring. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our next guest. Love chocolate? Turn your passion into a profession with École Chocolat School of Chocolate Arts. This award-winning school offers many programs for chocolate making so you can master techniques and gain the expertise and business knowledge you need to become a professional chocolate maker. You'll create mouth-watering chocolate recipes from professional instructors while interacting with your classmates and tutors all online. Become a chocolate expert with École Chocolat via your computer, phone, or tablet. Pursue your passion for chocolate. Visit écolechocolat.com today. Hi, everybody. We are back with Radio Cherry Bomb. If you are a regular reader of Cherry Bomb or a listener of our show, you know all about our next guest, Mimi Thorason. She's the personality behind the beautiful blog Manger and the author of A Kitchen in France. She has a whole bunch of kids who we just met and dogs who we did not meet, and she always has all of us dreaming about life in the French countryside. Mimi, we are so thrilled you're here. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hello, hello, and I am so happy to be here. I had amazing pizza just before coming here, and all apologies for this broken voice, but I lost it during the trip here. But I will try my best to answer and to be normal.
Well, thank you for not canceling on us. I know it's hard when you have laryngitis.
But I will go very close to the microphone. But I'm so, so happy and very exciting. This is the coolest radio station I've ever been in.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we think you're one of the coolest people we know about. So when your folks got in touch and said you were in town, we were like, please, 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 can she come on Radio Cherry Bomb?
It's an honor to be here.
I mean, everybody just loves your blog and your book, and we have so much to ask you. So, but you are expecting your next child.
Yes, I'm always pregnant. Everybody I meet is like, you're either pregnant or with a newborn, and it's a state of life. It's fine. I love it. And I feel, yes, it's going to be for June, a little boy.
Oh, I've lost count. This is 7?
Altogether will be 8, and it's my 6th baby.
Your 6th baby,
yes,
okay.
That's all.
And you have some, what do you call that, a blended family?
Yes, when I met my husband, mm-hmm. he had 2 kids, and I had 1. And we immediately founded a family, so this is baby number 5 of our family, yeah.
Right. So you will have 8 children total.
Yes.
But that pales in comparison to the number of dogs that you have.
Well, actually, right now we have 8 plus 5 puppies. So we try to, match the dogs to the kids. But, we just got a litter of very cute puppies. Aww. And we'll keep one. So we'll end up with 9, I guess.
What kind of dogs do you raise?
Well, we have a smooth fox terriers. It's my husband's big, big passion. So some husbands love gambling or drinking or yachting. But Otter is crazy about his dogs, especially the smooth fox terrier. It's our mascot. And it's even the mascot on our blog and on our wine. And we have one, Jack Russell, and Lady Gertrude is my beloved food mascot because she is always there by my side when I'm cooking. And she's a German pointer. She's a chocolate brown one we see everywhere in the book, on the blog.
Now, he's not just your partner in life, but he takes all the photos.
Yes, he is my hostage photographer. I hug him for as many assignments as possible. Yes, so we work together. We are one. We always call ourselves a dragon with two heads because we're very much infusion of what we do. We both are crazy about food. And as a matter of fact, when we first met, it was all about food. It was the first thing I think I told him is he wanted to buy me lunch. And I said, it was 5 a.m. And I said, no, I want, buy me breakfast. So no, we're both crazy about food and cooking and going to restaurants. We worked together prior to moving to the Medoc for a food guide. So it was fantastic, yes. So now we work together all the time. And we work pretty well together.
So it's an interesting life that you have because your life is your work and vice versa. You know, your family and your home and everything finds its way into your book and your blog.
Yes.
How do you, is there just no separation? Does it not matter?
I think, it's not about balancing. I always tell, I get asked often, and for me it's blending. So I have the luxury to say that my work is my play, and my play is my work, and my family life is also my work. Everything is intertwined, and somehow it's like cooking. I manage to blend everything. So I never wake up feeling, oh, I have to work. It's I love to cook, and it all comes naturally. And the kids all have chores in the house, like a big farm, and cooking, the dogs, the,
not cooking the dogs, literally. Cooking, comma, the dogs.
Exactly. Yeah. And so basically, it's all blended, and it works out. So whether I have 2 kids or 6 kids or 8 kids, it works.
I'm one of 5, and my mom always said, having one child is the hardest.
And yes,
keep adding more kids,
it actually gets easier.
Okay, you have to explain that for those out there who are like, how is that possible?
I think the first one is an education. It's fear. It's the first baby steps. And then the second, it gets complicated because you have to times 2. But then you learn the ropes and, the tricks of the trade of being a mom. And then 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Well, it's just our kids are very independent. I think that's a very good tip to raise independent kids. And they all take care of each other. I guess they're quite close in age, so they complement each other a lot. And I don't know. I think after you don't count anymore. It just becomes one big family life. And to be quite honest, I don't find it difficult at all. I love it. I love being a mom, of course, and cooking is my thing, but it just works. It's probably easier to have more kids than 2. I don't know. Maybe it's a question of habit, and maybe now I've become a triathlon mom, where I can just handle it. But I think it's a good balance, it works out.
Do you forget their names ever? I remember my dad would be like, you, and you could be like,
I never forget. However, I always confuse. Like, I will say Gaia instead of Audrey, or Audrey instead of Louise. And, they're always like, I am not her. I am me. And it was like, so that happens a lot, especially right now being pregnant. I tend to forget a few things, but that happens.
So is it easier raising all these children and all these pets in the countryside than Paris,
definitely,
for example?
When we're in Paris, we were a very big growing family already. And when we asked ourselves, should we transfer to another life? And we always dreamt of a country life because, you know, looking at editorials, François Allard, whom we love, and Rose Gardens and Wellington Boots, and lots of dogs. It looks also so perfect. And it's a kind of life that we aspire to during the holidays. You know, we would rent, villas in Tuscany or wherever. And then we just said, why don't we just live that life? And of course, we took the big leap. Thanks to my husband, he had the idea first, the guts. And for sure, the space and the freedom of raising a family, and of course the dogs. But we always said that the dogs led us the way to the Médoc, because it was especially because of the dogs that we needed more space at first. So we're always very thankful about that.
So you must run... Anyone who has a lot of pets, I find, is a super chill person.
Yes, I think so. They make you zen, and they complement your life, and they add a certain dimension of calmness. So if my husband was here, he would just, you know, convert anybody into a dog owner.
You can't be stressed about, you know, dog hair on your clothes or the dogs jumping on the couches or things like that.
We're quite careful about them being in the house. There's one house dog because she's really good. She's very well behaved. But no, you can't be stressed about dog hair. And you just have permanently a roller in your handbag. And I wear a lot of black dresses, so it's kind of challenging. But luckily, the dogs I have, hair brushes off fast.
There's a big conversation taking place around the internet now, and Instagrammers and bloggers, and that whole idea of perfection and the perfect life. And I think people can often look at what you put out into the world and think, oh, she's got such a perfect life. How do you strive to find that balance between reality and something that people want to look at every day and kind of lose themselves in?
Yeah, I know. I've gotten a lot of questions around that. And it's very interesting, especially in France. It's all very new, this whole Instagram and what you're projecting in your social media. So my point is that nobody's perfect, for starters. And we project what we love, our passions. So obviously when I cook, it's what I love most. So I present it in a way that I want to eat it. And obviously, I want to eat something that looks great and appetizing. For me, a good food shot is, okay, will I want to eat that or not? You know, is the Bayonne ham, you know, not too shiny in this photo because that looks fake? And generally speaking, perfection is... I don't try to project perfection. I just grasp an image that's picture perfect because I love it, and it just happens to be very random or not calculated. I think Otter and I, our main thing and our main goal, whether it's shooting our cookbook or the blog or just family picture, is to never have it staged. It's actually a moment. The dog was like that. Louise was doing this, or Gaia was just, you know, peeking at the food or tasting a cake. It just happens to be random moments, and if others perceive it as perfection, or we have anybody who knows that when you have, you know, 7 kids in the house, your house will never be tidy, your house with all these dogs. So, no, it's just photography and just random moments. So it's to be perceived by the others.
We were talking about a friend we have in common, a girlfriend, yes, who just went to visit you, and I was asking just about your whole life down there, and she's a very skeptical individual, and she paid you the biggest compliment. She said she's the real deal.
Well, that's very thing. A very nice thing to say. Yeah, she was really good fun, and she was such a Frenchified American. I loved the way she said "je crève la dalle." You know, she speaks like a typical, you know, garage boy. You know, the way she was saying I was hungry. She was very sweet, and I'm very flattered. I mean, that's what I like to hear, I guess. But, so thanks, Alex.
Are you really renovating a chateau? Did I read that?
Yeah, so about a year and a half ago, we found this. We were renting a house, a farmhouse. And our plan was a 3-year plan, leave the city, try the country life, and see what happens. So we didn't have a plan of a blog or a book or anything like that, or TV shows. And then everything unfolded so in such an organic way. And after 3.5 years, we were really in a position where we just had to try and find a house or buy the house that we were renting. And one day, by coincidence, I see this chateau in the middle of a village. And it's so beautiful, but so austere, but I'm so intrigued. And it was not on our list because the real estate agent was like, no, it's not your style. You need something more rustic. But I said, no, I want to go in. So we go in, and within seconds, I get goosebumps. It's like, I'm just feeling so much energy. And then all of a sudden, I just hear the story unfold of the house, which is amazing. It's the inspiration of the new book, actually, because it's the great-great-grandmother of the owner of the house was a legendary chef and had a restaurant in this house. So you can imagine how I felt when I was just visiting room by room. It's very, very big, 15 rooms. And then I hear this story of this woman, until 1957, having a restaurant, being a chef. This is where she cooked her two beautiful kitchens. And she was the mayor's mistress, but her husband was the boulanger of the village, the baker. And I was so intrigued. And I was actually, there was a book being born in my head as I was visiting the house. And it was love at first sight. I actually called my editor that night. My first book hardly came out, or was just about to, and I was telling her about this new story I had, and it was amazing, and I knew it. It was amazing. And yes, so it was all very quick, and I just, I didn't know how I was going to get the house. I just told the estate agent, yes, I'm buying it, any price. I'm always like that, over-enthusiastic. So we got the house, and we've been renovating it for the last year and 3 months.
What kind of condition was it in?
It was not in a terrible condition, but yes, there was a lot of work to do. Luckily, the family lived there for quite a while. So there's always been someone there that was there to open the windows and to air the house and not let it, go into ruins. So there was a lot of work. I mean, we just wanted to strip off what was hidden behind, which is the real treasure, which was all the beautiful stone, because it was all covered in plaster or wallpaper. And we were blessed having all the amazing tiles intact. So, no, it's been a pleasure renovating it. We still have lots to do, but that's the fun part. But now, I started with the kitchen.
Now, this is the subject of your book coming out this fall, correct?
Yes, so exciting.
We're thrilled there's a new book coming out. Can you tell us the title?
Yes, it's called French Country Cooking, and it's all about this house, because we moved and the story unfolded. I always had a dream to do a pop-up restaurant. So when I found this house, it was natural that it was the place to be. And so I, after renovating it, and we continue our family meals, which is my main inspiration, traditional French cooking, but easy, where everybody can do it and families can have it. And it's convivial and it's all gathering around the table. And I had this dream of a pop-up where I want my guests to come in, and it's my fantasy restaurant. They come in, they have radishes with fleur de sel and butter and great champagne, and then they sit and there's white tablecloths even at lunch, and it's all beautiful. It's all the things I love about the details of a table and the menu. And so on the menu, the recipes are in the book, and we shot it all in life last summer. And so the story, and it tells this story. And I love the staff meals as well in the book, because they are always the best. And I have a feeling they will be very popular in the book compared to other recipes, because they have like mimolette and comté, mac and cheese, a croque madame with a twist. I have a kale and sausage pasta, because we grew kale. We have a great vegetable garden and we grew kale. And the fun part is that in France, kale is so exotic and so chic and so precious. So we had a kale and mushroom pasta, and kale and sausage pasta. So all these recipes are from this new story, this new house, the family meals. And it's a more classic book in the sense the first one was more seasonal. This one is more starters, mains, le goûter, the tea time hour, and the staff meals, which I personally love. And of course, everything to do with the restaurant, what we served, the best of recipes at work that were popular. And I also host a lot of workshops. So I had my little army of recipe testers. And so it made me very happy to have all these recipes gathered all our favorites.
So that's something for everyone's holiday list, the next book from Mimi Thorsen. Do you think the restaurant will be a thing you revisit?
Definitely. It was a pleasure. It was our first time, so we were... Everybody's like, oh, have you had any experience? No, this is the first time. So I had a great little team, and we did it for about a month and a half, and I've had a lot of requests to do it again. So I will definitely do some in the fall to coincide with harvest season, wine harvest in the chateaus, and there's a lot of people coming down. And I will try to do them seasonally, maybe 2-3 weeks. It's fun. And I will even try to have one in New York. And I think it's kind of fun to maybe export a few events here and there. So definitely the start of something great.
Oh, that's great. Well, it would be a dream to go to one of those. All right. Since you're losing your voice, we're going to cut it short and do the speed round. So just quick answers to the next few questions. Tea or coffee?
Tea.
How do you take it?
Black.
Sweet or salty?
Salty.
What is in your refrigerator at home?
Lots of cheese, especially Mimolette and Brie Savarin. Always a few bottles of champagne because we entertain a lot. Almond milk.
Homemade?
And yes, homemade. And lots of butter. I can't live without butter. And creme fraiche.
Favorite thing to eat?
Well, because I'm from two heritage, I would say that if I was on the French side, it's pâté en croûte, which is the French meatloaf. And on the Chinese side, it's xiaolongbao. You know, it's those little buns, preferably with crab roe.
Least favorite thing to eat?
Sea cucumber.
Favorite snack?
Almonds.
Favorite kitchen tool?
My KitchenAid.
Place you'd like to travel to next?
Portugal.
All right. So, Mimi, I'm sorry. We could talk to you for an hour easily.
My voice is coming back.
Oh, good, good. How much longer are you in town for?
Until Sunday. I wish I could stay longer, but I just can't wait to come back.
Are your kids enjoying New York City?
They're loving it. They so love it. And they come here and they have specific ideas, each one of them, to go to an ice cream parlor, to go to this doll store, to go and see the plaza because of Home Alone. And they want to see, you know, cops on their horses and Central Park. So it's really fun.
Oh, that's super cute. And you'll be back in the fall, we hope.
Yes.
When the book comes out.
I'm definitely going to make sure to come back and spend more time. And I'll have my little baby boy in the arms. Probably, hopefully everything will be good. And yeah, I'm really looking forward. I love coming here.
Well, it was an honor to have you on Radio Cherry Bomb. We're huge fans of the book and the blog.
And I love the magazine. And I think this is the coolest radio station.
Oh, thank you. Well, you have an open invitation to come back anytime. So I hope in the fall you can make it back here. So big thank you to Mimi Thorsen, the woman behind the blog Manger, and the author of the book we all love, A Kitchen in France. If you don't own that book, you need to. I think we're giving away a copy. If you go to our Instagram account, Gilly's holding it up. We have a signed copy for one lucky person. So go to our Instagram account and leave a comment. Big chocolate kisses to our new sponsor. I should have, or not so new sponsor, this season's sponsor. I should have Mimi say their name instead of me saying it. École Chocolat.
École Chocolat.
So much nicer when French people say that. They are this season's sponsor, so thank you so much. Check out the different classes they offer at écolechocolat.com. If chocolate is your passion, you just might want to make it your profession. And thank you to everybody out there for listening. You're the bomb.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Melanie, and I'm the pastry chef and owner of Mini Melanie, a small artisanal bakery in New York City. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or to learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Jessamine Rodriguez, the CEO and founder of Hot Bread Kitchen, where we bake all our mini cakes and truffles.